Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, and today is July 9th, 2015, and today is the day the magnificent Sai Kulwant Hall was inaugurated 2 decades ago, 20 years ago in 1995. Today is that holy Thursday. In fact, this month is very significant, because the festival of Guru Purnima is around the corner. Guru Purnima indeed is very special. And when I think of it, it is not for no reason that Swami attached so much significance to this festival. In a manner of sorts, the festival calendar in Prashantinilam begins with this celebration, because this is the first major festival after the start of the new academic year. And this is the occasion when many a times Swami made revealing pronouncements, or unveiled a new facet of His mission, or suddenly declared something which stunned everyone. Guru Purnima is special not only for this reason, but also for something much deeper. And tonight, we will revisit a few significant Guru Purnimas and then dwell on this significant aspect of why Guru Purnima for us is very special. Why Guru Purnima is such an important occasion for every devotee. So that is what we will discuss today in the next 60 minutes or so in this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday
Live. So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:45, and today we discuss the unparalleled preceptor. We were talking about Guru Purnimas. During the Guru Purnima in 2010, the last Guru Purnima when the physical form of Bhagwan was with us, Swami announced on that occasion that He is appointing a panel of trustees to the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, and until then He was the sole trustee. So that landmark decision of devolving the powers of the trust happened on the Guru Purnima day. That is 2010. But if you go back in time, in 1966, Swami returned to Prashantinilam on this day after a long tour of Mumbai, Pune, Gulbarga, Mysore, Madurai. And He gave all the devotees assembled a few drops of amrit or nectar. And even as He distributed this, He said, "The tongue that has tasted this amrit should no longer relish unrit." Unrit is falsehood. And then Bhagwan, on the day of Guru Purnima in 1966, inaugurated the branch of the State Bank of India in the ashram, in the Prashantinilam ashram. And then Swami even gave a discourse, and He said, "This bank, the conventional bank, is where money is taken and given." But Swami said, "What is significant is that spiritual bank. And in that spiritual bank, what is accepted and given is love." Swami said, "That bank, that spiritual bank, receives deposits and maintains accounts strictly and confidentially. And He said, "Every little thing is entered there. Every little thing is accounted for. Your thoughts, your deeds, your words, good, bad, indifferent, everything is recorded." And then Swami said, "Develop the saving habit. Because only when you develop the habit to save, can you save yourself? Swami said, in the conventional banks, they take dhanam, they take money. But in the spiritual bank, they take dhyanam, they take equanimity, they take your spiritual progress as the deposit. Like this, that discourse was filled with beautiful similes from a commercial bank to apply in our life. We have to know that the only bank we can bank upon at any time is this divine love. And this bank will never ever get exhausted. So that was 1966 Guru Purnima. In 1968, Guru Purnima was purely exceptional because Bhagwan, for the only time in history, was out of India. Yielding to the yearnings of African devotees, Swami changed his plan of returning to Mumbai on Guru Purnima day and spent the whole day showering the Africans with his loving benediction and grace. Professor Kasturi writes, more than 25,000 people gathered that morning for the bhajan, and the Africans joined the chorus led by a Tanzanian, Mr. Juro. For over 2 hours, Swami walked slowly among the lines of lonely, love-seeking, eager hearts, giving each person a handful of sweets and a packet of vibhuti. And to the amazement of the recipients, most of them discovered inside the packet, lying ensconced in the midst of the holy ash, enamel or metal portraits of Christ, of cross, Krishna or Swami himself. So that was the exceptional Guru Purnima of 1968. Moving further, 1971 Guru Purnima was again a landmark event. That was when the new hostel building with 100 airy rooms for the girl students of the Anandpur College was inaugurated. Now they had a separate auditorium and also an artistic and lavish separate library which was attached to the college building. And on that occasion, Bhagwan spoke in the presence of the President of India, Sri V.V. Giri. There were so many other ministers, educationists, dignitaries, and Swami said, at present, colleges are infected by anxiety and perplexity, by discontent and ill-discipline, by irreverence and futility. They have lost the status of temples of learning, where youth is shaped into self-reliant, contented, and enterprising heroes. Swami said, when I identified these defects, deficiencies and dangers which are so rampant in the country today, I resolved upon this college in the Rayal Sima region at Anandpur. And Bhagwan went on to say, I am never satisfied with the declaration of intentions. I must taste the ananda of putting them into action. I express my love through every act, every intention of mine. More than the floods of eloquence in praise of that intention and millions of words written in elaboration of the theme, I insist by my own example on immediate and complete fulfillment of that intention. And then Bhagwan went on to share, this will be a Gurukula, a place where teachers and taught will grow together in love and wisdom, as close to the ideals of the hermitages of the past as possible under present conditions. And then Swami said, today is Guruvar, today is Thursday. It is also Guru Purnima, the day set apart for adoration of the Guru. And then, towards the end, Bhagwan said, the seed has been planted today. It has to sprout and spread as a tree. As a tree heavy with fruits, it has to confer security and sustenance to all. That is what Bhagwan Sir, on Guru Purnima Day 1971, and how beautiful and how prophetic that statement is. Because over the years, we have seen how beautifully this Sankalpa of Bhagwan, the supreme educator of the age, how it has blossomed into temples of learning, holding aloft the holy Sai ideals of integral education. Integral education where heart is as important as the head. How that seed today has spread like a huge banyan tree, and it's just only spreading to different corners of the world. The Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning was awarded the A++ rating by the National Accreditation Council and hailed as a crest jewel among universities in India by the University Grants Commission. Even recently, it was, when the reaccreditation was done, it was hailed as among the top 10 universities in India. And then you have the institutes of Sathya Sai education present now in every continent. You have Sathya Sai schools run in every corner of the world, from Argentina to Africa to Australia. Then you have the hugely successful EHV program, Education for Human Values program, organized for children and teenagers by Sai centers all over the globe. Everything stands as a testimony to the grand and glorious revolution that Sai, the Sadguru, is bringing about in the collective consciousness of the world. More importantly, in the hearts and minds of the younger generation. In the aarti that we sing at the end of every bhajan session, the last verse hails him as Sadguru Deva. He is the divine teacher of the supreme truth. One evening in 2007, a student asked Swami, "Swami, what is the best relationship we can have with you?" Those of us who have been touched by Baba's love, you know, we adore and extol him in many ways. Sometimes as the mother, very caring and loving, fostering and protecting us like no one else can. Some relate to him as the best friend with whom they can share. They share a camaraderie that allows them to open up to him anything and everything about life. Then there are those for whom Swami is the most comforting father, one who has a solution for their every problem, one who does not shy away from reprimanding them. And there are also those for whom Swami is just plain and simple. He is just their guru. So this boy, he was confused. He wanted to know which among this is the best relationship to have with Bhagwan. He said, "Swami, you have looked after me like an extremely doting mother. You have corrected me like a disciplinarian father. You have loved me like a most dear friend. You have guided me onto the right path like a guru. But tell me, of all these, what is the best way to relate to you? What is it that I should cultivate and foster?" He was just asking himself, how can I connect with Swami permanently? Because he was leaving the college that year. He wanted to strengthen his bond with Bhagwan, and he wanted an answer. Swami looked deep into his eyes, and then in a calm but assertive tone, Swami said, "If you want my relationship with you to be permanent, then regard me as your guru. Take me as your revered master and be a steadfast pupil. Then this bond will last not for a lifetime, but for lifetimes together." What he truly is for all of us is this. He is our Master Supreme. He is our Sadguru. Just like an outstanding teacher, he is concerned only about one thing, his pupil's progress. And towards this end, he will do anything. He will suffer any amount of pain. He will take in any measure of ignominy. It does not matter if he becomes unpopular or his students even begin to hate him. He will go out of his way any number of times and do things, whatever is needed, what will fill his pupil's heart with ecstasy, what is needed for his or her growth. Towards that end, he will do anything. If it comes to that, he will change all his plans without even batting an eyelid. He will smilingly welcome and endure unimaginable hardships if need be. If that is the best way to teach his pupil a tough lesson, that he will just undergo that. In 2003, Bhagwan was down with an injury due to an apparent mishap. He did not come out for darshan for almost a fortnight. People across the world prayed for his health. Students, devotees, young and old, everyone had just this prayer in their heart. Swami, please heal yourself as soon as possible. Swami, please become normal. Swami, please heal yourself. When Swami is physically not well, that is the only thing you could do. You could only pray. There was no other way, no other cure, no other solution. Way back in 1988, when Swami was in Kodaikanal, one day Swami hurt the little toe of his right foot and the pain persisted for quite a few days. And he used to have slight discomfort while walking. And Swami refused to take anything to ease the pain. So one day, naively, one student, Venkatesh Iyer, he sent a tube of ointment through Mr. Radhakrishna, who was caretaker of Bhagwan, used to serve Bhagwan. And he requested Mr. Radhakrishna to ensure, to insist on Swami applying the ointment on his toe. And you know what happened? That evening Swami came out of the room with a tube of ointment in his hands. And as soon as he saw this brother Venkatesh Iyer, Swami gave him the tube and said, "This body does not need medicines. Your prayers are enough for healing any wounds this body has." In fact, this student was blessed by Swami to accompany him on the Kodaikanal trip in 1989 also. And interestingly, in that subsequent year, Swami recollected this incident when he saw this boy in Kodaikanal. And Swami mentioned how the previous year this boy had brought his ointment and reiterated what he had said earlier. His prayer can only our prayers can heal him. So, coming back to our story, in 2003, in Vrindavan, Swami had this injury. He did not come out for a fortnight. After a month, things became normal. And then, an elderly devotee mustered some courage and he asked, "Swami, was this necessary? Why did you take this injury upon yourself? It was so painful for us to see you in this condition." Swami said, "Listen, when I was hurt, every heart prayed only for me. For once, there was this spirit of unity in prayers all across the planet. And when there is such harmony in thought, the world over, do you know how many of your sins get washed away? And if your sins get washed away, will you not be happy? And if you are happy, will I not be happy?" This is what Bhagwan revealed. So just so that we forget our petty wishes and desires and pray for him and him alone, so that we are uplifted, the Lord is willing to suffer any amount of pain. He is God, not because he can do amazing things, not because he can build mammoth institutions or by his mere will even change the earth into sky or sky into earth. He is God because He can love us. He can love us to such an extent that He can diminish Himself to any extent to fill us with delight, to fill our soul with ecstasy. Someone said, have you ever imagined what selflessness can do? Just look at the sun, what it does. Just see what difference you can do to the world if you only want to be there for the other. What? With a selflessness like you see in the sun, you light up the entire sky. Every day the sun burns itself out. It is actually dying every moment so that millions and billions can live a good life, can enjoy their life. And that is what we saw in Bhagwan too. In fact, the last Sunday darshan of Bhagwan was a living testimony to this. March 20th, 2011. I remember very clearly. It was a day of deep rejoicing and also a day of tearing anguish. After 7 p.m., finally there was movement in front of the Yajur Mandir. And then a wave of inexplicable happiness started sweeping the entire Sai Kulwant Hall. On that day, even though it was already dark and bhajans had been going on for more than an hour, Swami chose to go around the devotees very slowly. He was accepting almost everyone's prayers and letters. Every few meters his car stopped and he spoke to someone, blessed another, dropped a vibhuti packet to the third and so on. And Baba went through the complete darshan round. And now everyone was expecting him to come onto the stage. But the wheels of his car, which were about to turn left to come to the portico, the eager devotees who actually were waiting to see him on the portico, and Bhagwan, once he was seated on the dais, now the devotees could blissfully fill their eyes with the purity and beauty of his presence. This is what they were expecting and waiting, because they've been waiting for more than 3 hours. But suddenly Bhagwan's, the car wheels turned and the car glided towards the right. And now Swami was with the devotees again. Another darshan round started. And imagine the thrill that went down the spine of every soul present on that sacred Sunday. Whoever missed giving a letter or seeing him in his eye or treasuring a close glimpse during the first round now virtually leapt in ecstasy. And Swami was bestowing this bonus blessings for another 10 whole minutes. And finally, Bhagwan came onto the dais. And now, what happened was, again, something amazing. Swami immediately beckoned the birthday boy sitting in front and he blessed him profusely. And even as the boy returned to his seat, another boy with the tray looked at him prayerfully and Swami granted Padmaskaram to him too and showered akshatas, those yellow rice grains, on him. And encouraged by the tidings, the third boy got up. And to his utter joy, Bhagwan asked him also to come closer. So the scene just repeated the fourth time, fifth time, sixth time, seventh time, and it just went on and on. It seemed like Swami is in a great mood because the tenth boy was receiving his birthday blessings, very unusual. And now some students had a flash. They rushed to the hostel, hurriedly prepared their birthday trays and began to dash to the mandir because they thought today is a bonus day. Today, doesn't matter when is your real birthday, the day Bhagwan blesses you, the day you can get your blessings from Bhagwan, that is your real birthday. So whichever calendar date you are born is immaterial. Here was an opportunity that cannot be missed. Because Bhagwan is in such a blessing mood. And so, they went to the hostel, they came back and still they saw that Swami was blessing the boys one after the other. Meanwhile, the tiny tots from the primary school too showed up. And cutely they fell at Bhagwan's feet, and Swami most lovingly caressed them and sweetly accepted whatever they had to offer. The little ones went back to their seats, and now we thought, probably now Swami will conclude the birthday blessings. Because now people wanted to see him. Because one after one, as someone was going up, they were not able to see Swami clearly. But it did not stop. The moment there was another pair of pleading eyes, Swami simply beckoned them to come near. And now Swami blessed that day the 25th boy, 26th boy, 27th, 30 boys. What a bonanza it had been that day. And it was still going on, 33, 34, 36, 37, 39. And we thought, is it ever going to stop? 40 boys Swami had blessed, March 20th. 2011. Unprecedented day of relentless grace. How many priceless moments created in one single evening for so many fortunate souls. It was indeed a day of great rejoicing. But at the same time, as I told you, it was a day of tearing anguish too. Very much. Because you could see how hard it was for Bhagwan. It was in fact so difficult to watch the scene. Because Swami was obviously in pain. You could sense that he had taken the trouble of coming out for darshan that day, in spite of his body being in such a precarious condition. And every time he raised his hand to bless the birthday boy, it was an ordeal. There was not enough energy in the physical frame to even raise his palm a few inches. Yet he did it. He was hiding the strain behind his smile. And he did it not once, not twice. Again and again. Scores of times. In fact, sitting there, you just felt, Swami, it's fine. You can stop now. You have already blessed so many. Now please relax, just enjoy the bhajans. But you know, he's the sun, he's the ever incessant sun. He's unceasing, he's relentless. He was just destroying his body bit by bit. It was almost like he was saying, come what may, I will not listen to my body. I will just give, give and give. Till the last ounce of my being, I will just give. It almost seemed like he had come with that determination that day. Actually, to watch that was heartbreaking. He did this because it was making a huge difference in that one soul who was getting that blessing. For the students and devotees who had this opportunity that day, those moments would become eternal springs of inspiration and subsequent transformation. This was the last Sunday of the physical form of Sri Satya Sai, and I feel this one day encapsulated what the Sai Sadguru had done all the 8.5 decades of his earthly sojourn. Just wearing himself out systematically day after day, week after week, decade after decade. The only goal being to somehow teach and train, to confirm and confer on as many individuals as possible the secret to lasting happiness. When he saw others suffer, he suffered. When he found others grieving, he lamented. Why are they languishing in sorrow when infinite joy is just a millimeter away? He cried when we cried. And that is what the Sadguru does. And that transformation only the Sadguru can bring us. Because he knows. He knows each soul in and out, outside, inside, deep inside. All other teachers, gurus, they can only show us the way. But when the Sadguru descends, there is no path, there is no road to travel. The path itself becomes the goal. And Swami has done this and is doing this to every individual, one at a time. Every individual is being chiseled. Every individual is being coaxed. Every individual is being molded. Every individual is being guided. And whoever has experienced this life-altering love of Bhagwan has found how his life has altered. And there are so many. Every devotee's story is one story where you saw how the Sadguru has ensured that that person now is on a faster pace towards the goal. Today I'm going to play for you the first part of a conversation I had with one person, one individual who has had this amazing blessing from the Lord to be with him since the 70s. He's experienced the physical love of Bhagwan for 30, 40 years. He's been an instrument of Bhagwan in executing many major projects. Thanks to Bhagwan, he has a great professional career. But what is more important and most beautiful is how Swami has been a professional to the T when it comes to molding him into an ideal student, an ideal disciple who will benefit the most from the Sadguru. I'm going to play for you the first part of the conversation with Mr. Rajan Sood from New Delhi. Here it is. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to this special episode of Outside Inside, Deep Inside. And today, in front of me is someone who has experienced Bhagwan in all these dimensions, outside, inside, and deep inside, in so many ways, through so many years, not years, decades. He has experienced the love of Bhagwan at various levels, in various dimensions, and experienced the relationship with Bhagwan again in different ways. Those of us who have been listening to Radio Sai often perhaps would have heard the conversation we had with him before. He is someone who was blessed to be deeply involved in the construction of Bhagwan Super Speciality Hospital, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Fire Medical Sciences, Whitefield. Bhagwan gave him the opportunity to be one of the principal architects of this hospital. That is just one of the projects. But the biggest project that Swami has been involved in his life is this project of chiseling him. And that has been going on since he came to the lotus feet way back in the 70s. And since then, little by little, Bhagwan has been shaping this beautiful flute through which he breathes out lovely music off and on when he takes it upon his divine lips. As the festival of Guru Purnima draws near, I thought it would be nice to listen to this yet another song, beautifully composed by the Lord. All the songs emerge once the flute becomes hollow and straight. And the Lord continuously does this. And he does it in a very beautiful manner. And it is always unique with every individual.
But once the flute is ready, the song of the Lord, so melodious, so uplifting, so ethereal, goes on. And it delights the flute, it delights the Lord, and it delights everyone around and everything around. So with gratitude to Bhagwan for having enabled Mr. Rajan Sood to be here with us in the studios today, I once again express my deep sense of gratitude to Bhagwan and welcome Mr. Rajan Sood to the studio.
Sai Ram Rishu, thank you for having me here again. And we are all looking forward to the Guru Purnima celebrations around the end of the month. I just want to correct one small thing when you said that he's been chiseling since I came to him in 74. Because I know for sure this refinement, this chiseling has been going on way before.
Much before.
Way before. And it is a work in progress. Heaven knows for how long. And heaven knows how long it will continue. Till we are good enough to please him, to be what he wants us to be. I hope, and I know, not really hope, I know that that link, that connection, that love, both ways, will continue forever.
As someone said, it's a love song in the wind.
Yes, it is. It is. It is the true romance of one's life. To have your God as your Guru, as your beloved. And I think learning becomes so much easier when there is some form of attachment, some kind of a connection. Attachment, of course, we all have to his feet, to his physical form. But attachment in your heart, a longing in your heart to be with him, I think that in itself is the biggest tool that God can use to develop you, to make you grow. I feel very, very fortunate that in this lifetime I could spend a very large part of my life with him. And I know I would have been glued to this place had he repeatedly not kept sending me back. Because I know none of us want to go away. None of us want to go away. It will become a beehive, you know, all of us clinging on to him. He has his ways, he has his reasons, which we understand slowly as the passage of time goes by. You know, Swami had very often in his discourses said that the word guru is made in Sanskrit is a combination or a sandhi of two smaller words, gu and ru. Gu means darkness, ru means to remove. So guru is he who removes darkness. It is a bit of a, you know, a strange thing because as I understand there is nothing called darkness. You know, even if you see scientifically, nobody studies darkness. We study light.
Light.
Darkness is only lack of light.
Yes.
This place where you don't have light at that point of time is dark. But there is no study for darkness. So, to remove darkness, as I understand, is only God can do it. It is not humanly possible. Because if you have a student, to remove darkness means to remove, put light into his words, into his thoughts, into his deeds. It has to be a total lit up personality. It cannot be partial. You can't just have beautiful words coming out of you, but in your heart, your thoughts are not as beautiful. It all has to go together. And I think that that is possible only if God decides to be your guru. Humanly, not possible. Humanly, just not possible. And I think, yes, he did take me up as a challenge. I know that he made my life very beautiful. Every moment of my life, he touched with his love. And, you know, like we all need guru to guide us in our life, to guide us correct. There are lots of guides we find in the market. But to guide us and take us the right way. I think similarly, the guru also needs students. Without yes. a student, guru is not complete. So, I mean, what is a guru going to do if he didn't have student to teach? And I think it is very humbling to know that, yes, he did choose me to be one of his students. I don't know if it sounds wrong, but I feel very honored to be touched by him. You know, that he cared. He cared that I existed. He cared that I needed to be refined. And he loved me enough to think that he would want me for himself. You know, when in hindsight, when you think, yes, there have been a lot of people who have been touched in this way. But I mean, look at the planet Earth. Probably with that respect, only a handful.
Yes.
And to be one of those handful, you know, the Lord decided probably to pick up a fistful of sand and to be one grain in that. It's humbling and at the same time, a lot of joy in the heart. So, like you said, the story began a long time back. And long time as far as this session of this life goes, that is, I came to him, I saw him first in 1972. And I believe the one who shows you the guru or the god is also the guru. And in 72, Swami happened to be in Delhi. And my father used to be very curious. Every time there was a saint or a sage anywhere around, he'd pack up the whole family and say, okay, let's go and see. So in that sense, my first introduction, or a very distant darshan of Swami, was through my father.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the same year he left us. And thereon, after having seen him, the story actually, you know, the real story of life began. 73, he came to Delhi again. First time he spoke to me. 74, I came to him in the summer course. First time I spoke to him. And all this was as natural as a heart's beat. So normal. Nothing. It was so ordinary. Just like we are conversing.
So you didn't feel anything
nothing.
Special?
There was nothing extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay. Like he'd always been a part of life. There's nothing like a thunderbolt.
Uh-huh.
No. He just
very smoothly glided into your life.
Yeah. There was no effort, at least on my part. No, none.
You didn't have any mental blocks, any apprehensions. Who is he? How can I accept
him? Nothing at all.
Naturally, you knew that you sort of belonged to him.
Yes. Yes, our conversation in 73, rather his words to me were very brief. And in 74, it was the 74 summer course. My God, it was like, it was made for me. 74 summer course, I'm sure a lot of students felt like that. He had that knack of making you feel very, very special. And in 74 it started, and it was expected. I mean, it was understood. There was no doubt in that I did belong to him. In every which way that one could imagine. So he just, probably a very old story, and he started off the dialogue again. You know, for a guru to be able to connect with a student like that, I don't know if it is really possible. You know, superficially, yes, but a connection which is really not of this world. You can't even explain what that connection is. Even now, after so many years, I'm sure none of us can explain what that connection with him is, really. Barring if we name it love. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But probably even love is a very small word. It's a very small word. And Actually, a small word, but again, a very strong, very powerful word.
Love, even though small word, just like God, even though it is literally a word, one letter less than love, but it is so deep that you can never ever say that you know what it is. I think it's the same with love.
Absolutely. And to think that there possibly could be synonyms, you know,
yes.
One could replace the other at times. And maybe that is the reason why his most powerful tool with all of us was love. I think he managed to change us, modify us. I mean, there was no physical chisel and a hammer that he was chiseling out. His tool was only love. Either love or withholding of that love.
That was also a different form of love.
Yes, yes, which is born out of his love.
Yes.
So like we say darkness, it is actually absence of light. It is lovelessness, which is actually lack of love.
Yes.
All right? Where you are deprived of his love, that you begin to question yourself. You begin to ask yourself questions. Why this? Why is he holding himself back? Why is he not talking to me? Why was he angry? Why did he just look away? Why was it that he passed by without a smile? And started a process of introspection within you, which no guru in the world can do. Yes, modern day context, we do have gurus who talk of love, so-called pseudo-love gurus, but we know what context that is. That's rubbish. But here we are talking of a genuine link between him and us, and all of us. Some of us were fortunate enough to have felt it and experienced it. Some, maybe as time comes, will. You know, all of us have to go through that in our due time. And the same love that we are talking about, single-handed tool, there was nothing else required with it. Either give it or not give it. Period. And it created wonders. And I know this may be my story, but as far as this particular aspect is concerned, it is common to all of us. That we were hooked by his love and repaired by lack of his love. You know, how he made us grow.
Yes.
How he made us refined a little bit better than before was just withholding that love. And also, you know, there were times when he would express this. I remember once I was sitting at his feet in the interview room and he said, out of the blue, he looked at me, he says, "Main tumko kitna pyar karta hai."
Oh.
And I said, "What?" You know, I bloated up like a balloon.
"I love you so much."
And the next moment, but no attachment.
But no attachment.
But no attachment.
"I love you so much, but no attachment."
No attachment. And the balloon burst. Because as we understand, the love is a form of attachment. You know, it's him, it's you, and we are attached to each other. I think it took a long time to understand that attachment to the form doesn't have to be attachment to what he was.
Yes.
And what he thinks or what he knew we are. That attachment was enough. It wasn't an attachment of a physical level. Physical to the sense that he showed love on a physical level, but that, like I said, was again to, you know, to prod us on, to encourage us, to take us forward, like a mother would. And however, the mother is always attached. He wasn't. He wasn't. So as a guru, you know, guru, I am talking of modern day gurus, right? Or even of whatever little I have read of our history, and I can't see a parallel. You read the Mahabharata and you read Ramayana. Even when Vishwamitra came to take Lakshman and Rama into the forest to kill the demons, he knew who he was taking with him, and yet he stopped by and teach the mantras, that saying that they will give you power.
Bala, Ati Bala.
Bala and Ati Bala. So they were all there with limitations. Their understanding of the students, even being Maharishis, was relatively limited. But look at this. Look at this. It was like he knew us all inside out. There was never a moment where one would feel that, was there something he missed? It was always, oh, this also he knows. You know? So, I think we've all had this unique privilege of having been with him and having seen every aspect of a human relation with him, including that of a guru.
Yes.
You know, we've experienced him as a mother, as a father, as a brother, as a beloved, as everything. But also, very importantly, the guru. You know, without that, I think this relationship would never have been complete.
Exactly.
And having said that, it wasn't really that easy. It never, I don't think anybody can vouch for having had an easy time with him. Because he was a very hard, I mean, he is a very hard taskmaster. His word has to be obeyed. You don't obey, he'll make sure you do it. Right? And again, it's the same way. Withhold. Withhold. And there we are back on the way. And at the same time, being that our taskmaster, we also have seen the aspect of the softness of Swami, the tenderness of his love. Most of us have witnessed this very often. In 2010, when Swami came to Delhi, last day, I happened to be on duty in the dining room, so sort of in that area where Swami would move around. Swami came from his room, and I think there were about 28 or 29 boys who had come with him from Bharti. In unison, all of them started singing. The song was in Telugu. I could not understand the wordings, but I could feel them. I could sense that that song was addressed to a mother. And I have never seen tears like that in Swami's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine Swami, who would probably hit you with an iron rod if you didn't do what he wanted you to do. He was crying. You know, there have been so many occasions like this when I have seen him melt, literally melt. I was very angry with him at one point in time. He knows why. And I wasn't wrong. He did something that really hurt me deep inside. And, that finished off. The whole episode was over. And I had forgotten all about it and came back to Swami. And he called my mother and I for an interview. And he tells my mother, Amma, dekho kitna gussa karta hai.
How angry he gets.
Haan. Main kuch bola, itna gussa hua, that he threw his scarf away. And he said he will never come back again.
Wow.
And I was very uncomfortable, you know. I was very uncomfortable.
He became so angry that he threw his scarf away. Sevadal scarf.
Yes, yes. I was livid. That's not, I mean, it's not enough to explain how angry I was. But It was all forgotten in a couple of days. And the very fact that I was sitting at his feet again was proof enough. And then he says, for whatever happened, he caught it on my hand. And I could see his eyes getting moist. And he said, Raju, I didn't do it.
Oh my God.
I didn't do it.
Oh my God.
You know, that's what I'm saying, that on one side we've seen him very stiff. You know, always, it's because he was always right. So he knew where he wanted us to take, unless he was kind of not very aggressive about taking us in that direction, we wouldn't have gone.
Yes.
Right? And in the same way, so gentle, that he would offer an explanation to a minor devotee, like whom there were thousands floating.
Yes.
If I weren't there, somebody else would have been there.
Yes.
But I guess all of us were precious to him.
Absolutely.
All of us were precious to him. Again, in every role. In every role that we played in his life. So, having seen both sides of him as a very teary-eyed, repentant kind of a situation, and on the other hand, a very aggressive master, to put it that way. Very, very aggressive master. I had a number of times I had to face flak with him, literally having been thrown out of the mandir in Pushanthanilyam. Get out of here! You know, those kind of things. So it has been very rewarding, very enriching.
But the most interesting thing is, even when he does that, we somehow, deep inside, know that he loves us, isn't it?
Of course. Of course. When a parent chides you for something, or is angry with you for something, for a moment you feel, oh, they don't care. You know, over a period of time, you just build that impression in your mind. But with Swami, never. With never. If
exactly.
If you were angry, it just made you introspect inside.
Yes.
Why would he be angry?
Yes.
It is not in his nature to be angry.
Yes. You always knew that.
We all know that. And I think, except for that one incident, there was never a retaliation of any sort. It was introspection. Why? Why is he behaving like this? Where did I go wrong? And that is, I think, no other guru can do. No other guru anywhere can do is to make you look inwards. By a small thing, no interest in you. I'm not talking to you, I'm not looking at you. And it took him a lot of effort to discover you in the line and ignore you. Right?
Yes.
It wasn't easy.
Yes.
You can't look at the person to the left and to the right and not see me. And to pretend you didn't see me, boy, you got to be a very good actor. And we all know how we've been ignored.
Yes.
And not once, not twice, many, many, many times. And every time it was that, why Swami? What have I done wrong this time? And I think this kind of reaction from his students is what actually bore result. You know, it wasn't so much as the teachings of a conventional guru, but the fact that he could make us introspect. He was showing you as a mirror. Okay, friend, this is what you're like. You want to change? Who can do that? Nobody can do that. So his technique of teaching was totally different. I mean, none of us was familiar with it. Yet, from every student he got the same result. Introspection. Swami, you know, many times in the discourses say you need to introspect, if things like that. But here he made us do it. You know, saying something and then making sure that your students do it. How many gurus can do that? Who can do that? It is not possible. It is not humanly possible. And not just with one.
Yes.
You know, if you had one or two gurus, one can understand. Here they're steaming with devotees, man.
And every person felt the same way.
Yes. Yes. And there was never a mistake. Nobody was ever confused with somebody else. Okay? He didn't say what was intended for me to you. What was said to me was specifically doctor-made, you know, kind of tailor-made for me.
Yes.
There was never a confusion. I mean, there's lots of times in our lives where we are a little confused, say something that I intend for one person to another. But here, never, never, never. You know, in the interviews that we had with him, every time there were different people. I can hardly ever remember having gone in with the same set of people. Of course, the family was there, but the rest of them. And everybody was as familiar to him. You know, there was no special effort made. He would just hit the nail on the head to the right person. It didn't seem that he was trying to remember something or what. No. Never, never. At all. It was, he knew. He knew. And therefore, he managed to achieve what he did with us. So, I think it was all this only he can do. You know, very obviously we would not give that kind of importance in our life to anybody else, to really care for what anyone else says. But here, through the love he gave us, the affection, through the attention he gave us, and through the care that he took of us, that he managed to do what nobody else can, to get us on our own to introspect and think, what is wrong with me? Where have I gone wrong? And I've known of times, and not one time, repeatedly, that I would come from Delhi, and initial years I'd come for 2 months, 3 months and spend time with him till he started getting angry. And if I did not see a positive sign on his face, a kind of hint of recognition, I knew something was wrong. And tears would start off, here man, again I've done something to displease him. And start thinking what it is that I've done to displease him. And the day I realized what was wrong, he was standing in front of me, talking to me.
Oh, wow.
You know that, who can get these kind of reactions? Who can give this kind of pat on the back, yeah, you've done it? Without saying a word. Without any effort. Without any seeming effort. A lot of effort. Without any apparent effort on his part. Not once, many, many, many times. Till it almost became a habit that, you know, one would start thinking, am I doing something wrong? You know, is what I'm going to do, is that going to make Swami angry with me?
You became very watchful.
I think that was important, right? That is what he was, I mean, in the initial stages, I guess that's what he was trying to teach us all. Now that has stopped. Exactly the same process is going on, but perhaps in a different way. Now one doesn't wait that long. You know, that was, okay, when you come next, so the account of the few days away from him was taken, what did you do? But now it is instant. It is instantaneous.
So that was the first part of the conversation with Mr. Rajan Sood from Delhi, long-standing devotee of Bhagwan, who had the chance to bask in his divine physical presence for 30-40 years. And also been an instrument in his mission. He was responsible for the designing of the Bangalore hospital, super speciality hospital. But in this discussion, he was sharing about how Bhagwan, through his love and his seemingly lack of love, has slowly led him onto the path of introspection, the introspection which led to increasing transformation. And that is the journey of every devotee. And in the second part, he goes on and he shares more anecdotes from his life. And shares with us how he has experienced this facet of Bhagwan as the Guru. Swami is never content till we become what he wants us to become. There is the story of the salt doll who went to the ocean, and he asked, "Ocean, how do I know you? What should I do to love you?" And the ocean said, "Just come to me and find out yourself." And once the salt doll moved into the ocean, as it kept on going deeper into the water, it just was melting away. The legs of the doll became one with the water, and slowly the hands and the waist, and slowly every limb of the doll was becoming one with the water, till nothing of the doll remained. Being is lost in becoming. One day Swami asked a student, "What do you want?" And he didn't know what to answer, because this is a very tricky question. Sometimes even sages and seers, after years of penance, floundered in answering this question in the right manner. So with childlike innocence, this boy said, "Swami, I want you." Swami said, "I am always with you. I am always with everyone all the time. But tell me, what else do you want?" And the boy said, "Swami, I want your love." And Swami said, "Yes, this is what you should ask for." All we want is His love. Because all we have to become is love. We have to become one with love. First, we have to experience that love. We have to move towards that ocean of love. So that slowly one day we will melt into that ocean of love. The goal, the process, and the guide, everything becomes one. The Sadguru Himself will guide us to Him. All we have to do is to love Him. And pray that we too can become the love that He is. We too can love the way He loves. We too can shine in His love. That would be our tribute for everything that He means to us and for everything that He does for us and for everything that He continues to do for us. So let's take a moment, every passing moment, and offer our gratitude to this Sadguru. And before we wind up for the day and the night, shed 2 tears of love and gratitude and pray that we become instruments in His hands. So dear listeners, thank you so much. It is really blissful being with you and sharing with you His love. We'll continue this discussion next Thursday. We will listen to the second part of this conversation and also discuss more about this aspect of the Lord as the Sadguru. Thank you so much for being with us throughout the day. July 9th, it's a lovely day. We have begun this discussion on Bhagwan as the Guru, and by His grace, we will continue this and soak ourselves in His love. If you have any queries or comments, please feel free as always to write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. On behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, my heartfelt thanks to each one of you for giving us this opportunity to share His love, and a heartfelt gratitude to Bhagwan for giving us His love, enabling us to share His love. As a sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama by Balvika's children from Singapore. This was staged on 7th December 2003 in front of Bhagwan. The name of the play is Valmiki. So keep listening, keep sharing, and delighting yourself in His love. Thank you so much.